Good evening, everyone. Hello, hello, hello. Good to be here with you again. I'm sitting here in a very chilly basement. I can hear the wind howling outside. I haven't looked at the weather, but I'm wondering if winter is trying to come back. Here in Pueblo, we seem to have an experience of winter coming, and then it warming up again, and then winter coming, and then it warming up again. And this is the pattern all through what we call winter every year. When I lived in Massachusetts, you know, it would get cold, usually in November or sometime, and it would stay cold until May. But here in Pueblo, we don't have that. We have cold fronts that move through, and it can get cold for up to 2 weeks, sometimes only a few days, but sometimes as long as 2 weeks. But then it seems to warm back up again. So I'm listening to that wind howl, and I'm noticing how chilly it is here. I have my tea, and I'm wondering if we're about to have another little winter prior to Christmas. What I'm going to do is play a Christmas song, because as you all probably know, the only time that I really play from this playlist of mine, the Christmas playlist, is from Thanksgiving to Christmas Day, and then I put it away for 11 months out of the year, so I really enjoy listening to it. And the song that I'm going to play right now is by a Christian band called Mercy Me. I believe Lynn Castaldo knows them. Knows who they are. And the name of this song is Joseph's Lullaby. And let's use this just to kind of be still and be centered prior to the seven-step sharing.
Soon
All right. By the way, after I teach for the next 50 minutes, I'm going to need to turn the mic over to someone to play a song or something while I go and get Liz Cronkite. So, Lynn, okay, good. So I'll turn the mic over to you, and then when I return with Liz, I'll leave the room to get Liz, and then I'll return back to the room. So when I return back in the room, then whenever that song is over, you can turn the mic over to me. All right, so tonight we are going to begin the seven steps with quote number 689. And so I am posting that link in the room. There you are. This is a very, very short quote. We've looked at some long ones recently, but this one is very short. This is from the Yoga Vasistha. Bring about the cessation of the mind. That's all that it says. Bring about the cessation of the mind. And my journal entry is just as short. My journal entry says, the mind will chatter. Simply learn not to believe it. And you know, I think I might be at least beginning to go beyond that step now. When I wrote this journal entry, that was January 16th, 2013. and that was almost 3 years ago, right? We're coming up on 2016. And so then my guidance for myself was, the mind will chatter, simply learn not to believe it. And that's wonderful guidance. But I must admit that lately I have noticed that my guidance is not that. My guidance is a little different. My guidance for myself. My guidance for myself is to step deeper into awareness. And when I step deeper into awareness, any chatter that there might be seems to go way into the background. And sometimes for brief periods of time, the mind even goes silent. And there are different ways that I do this. For me, it's a practice that I practice every time I remember throughout the day, and my ability to remember is becoming greater and greater, which is really sweet. But one way that I step deeper into awareness, of course, is during meditation, during that hour that I set aside for focused, loving consciousness or awareness, watching awareness with love. But it most definitely seems to me like an hour is not enough. It doesn't make any sense to me to spend an hour in meditation, focusing on being deep in awareness or deeply focused on awareness, and then to get up from the chair where I meditate and just go back into the mind. Does not make any sense to me at all. I'm not very good at math, but mathematically it doesn't make any sense to me at all to spend an hour focused on awareness and then to spend the other 15 hours of the day focused on the mind. So I have been very focused on the practice of going deep into awareness throughout the day. And there are a few different ways I do this based on, you could say, what the activity is, what I'm doing now, what the activity of the moment is. For example, let's say I'm doing something that doesn't really require the mind's participation so much, you know, like doing dishes, taking a shower, walking the dog. These things I can do automatically without much concentration of the mind, which means the mind is really free just to wander and chatter, and attention is really free to get lost in it. So when I'm involved in these types of activities that really do not require mental focus, the way that I go deep into awareness in that moment is paying extraordinary attention to the moment. And I find that I am not good at it. I don't know if anyone is, but I'm not good at paying attention to everything. I'm good at paying attention to different things and letting attention kind of shift. So, for example, if I'm walking, I might spend a few moments paying attention to the breeze on my face. And then I might spend a few moments paying attention to the sound of the gravel under my feet as I walk. And then I might spend a few moments noticing the muscles in the legs as I walk. And if I'm hungry, I might spend a few moments noticing the feeling of hunger. And then I might spend a few moments just noticing the blue sky. And just, you know, and if my hands are cold, I might notice the coolness of my hands and the how my hand is gripping the leash. And I might notice how, you know, Jamie is pulling or not pulling in that moment on the leash and what that feels like to the hands and the arms. And just really paying attention to the experience itself, to the moment itself. Going deep into awareness in that way. Go into the body. Yeah, so when I go deep into awareness in that way, either the chatter becomes much less and much more background, or sometimes it just temporarily dies completely. Because there's no attention going to it, there's no attention going to it, and so it's not acting. You know, it's like a show-off. It acts up if you give it attention, but sometimes if you're not giving it any attention, it just quiets down. So that, you know, and I do that whether I'm doing dishes, whether I'm doing laundry, whether I'm making the bed, you know, taking a shower. I really focus on just this attention to the moment, attention to the sensations, attention to the feelings, the senses. Paying attention to the experience as if I will never have another experience again and as if I've never had this experience before. I love doing that. You know, I've never reached out and grabbed onto a microwave handle. I've never felt the coolness of the microwave handle before. I've never pulled the microwave open and noticed just how much muscle is required to do that. My eyes have never looked inside and noticed, you know, how the inside of a clean microwave shines and the little light at the top. You know, just as if I've never done it before. And I'll never do it again. I find that very helpful and fun. I enjoy it. It's not boring for me to pay attention to the moment. I love it. But then sometimes I find that my mind is needed. For example, I do most of the posting and page building on the Awakening Together website. I do all of the posting and page building on the Regina Dawn Akers website. And you know, that requires I do a little bit of HTML coding, but that requires a bit of attention to pay attention to get that right. So when I'm paying attention to work like that, where the mind is required, all of my attention goes there. My attention goes very much onto the work, paying attention to the work, paying attention to the coding, rather than thinking about you know, I got to get this done because then I got such and such else to do, which is the way I used to. So, now I just pay very much attention to what I'm doing as if it's the only task in the world I'll ever complete and as if I want to give myself to this task completely. One thing that I notice as I go deep into awareness in this way, either by really noticing the moment, you know, paying attention to the moment, or by really focusing on the work, concentrating on the work, using the mind as a tool in that way. One thing I notice is that the mind, it doesn't chatter. You know, I mean, it just doesn't have that opportunity. I mean, there may be a line every now and then, but it's not, you know, I'm not engrossed in it. Another thing that I notice is that it's as if time slows down. You know, the days don't go by so quickly. They're not boringly slow. I suppose they're just right. The truth is, there's no thinking about time at all. I suppose that's the truth. There's no thinking about time at all. That's why it seems that time slows down. There's no attention on time. There's just attention on what I'm doing now. So the moral of the story is, once upon a time, based on where I was, the chatter of the mind was, a more formed habit that I couldn't seem. If someone had told me then, you know, 3 years ago, if someone had told me, you know, Regina, what you should do is just focus on the moment so deeply that there is no chatter, I don't know that I would have been able to do it then. And in attempting to do it, I might have just gotten frustrated. I might have even felt like a loser. Who knows? You know, so then what was best for me was to admit, okay, there's a lot of chatter here, but I don't have to believe it. And that was a really wonderful step. And every time I noticed myself believing it, I would bring myself back. I would remind myself in some way, that's just chatter. I don't want to believe it. And what a beautiful step. In fact, one thing that I notice, and anybody else who notices this notices it too, because it's everywhere. One thing that I notice is that humans are really good at what I call making stuff up and believing it. Really what that means is they're believing their thoughts. You know, but humans are really good at just believing anything. I remember once, this is one of my favorite stories to tell because it's a marvelous story. I remember once, a long time ago, Larry Sire and I had known each other, I don't know, maybe a year or so, maybe a couple years, I don't know. But he listened to me a lot more than as a teacher. I don't think he listens to me as a teacher now, but back then he did. And one day when I was teaching, I played a Resta song called "You Don't Fool Me, You're the Christ." And in that song, she's in the foreground singing, but in the background, there's a voice of a woman complaining. And what she's doing is she's singing to that woman, you know, while the woman's complaining, she's singing to that woman saying, "You don't fool me, you're the Christ." So she's not focused on her complaining. She's focused on her truth. But Larry heard that song, and Larry thought that the person in the background doing all of the griping was me. He thought that I was in the background griping while the song was playing. And for a day or so, this really bothered him because he thought, oh, no, she's a fake. You know, she's a fake. And then finally, he decided to call me and ask me. And I thought that was so wonderful. He could have just gone the rest of his life thinking that was me in the background talking. He could have told everybody else what a fake I was, how he heard with his own ears me saying this and this and this when I thought I was out of mic range. And fortunately, when he called me, I was able just to tell him, oh, no, that's the song. And then the really funny thing is, some months later, we were doing a conference in Texas, and a part of that conference was a concert, Laurent Ellie Levy, Resta Burnham, and Larry Sire. And they did that song, and Larry got to play the role of the complainer in the background while Resta was singing in the foreground. So that was really funny. But I've always admired what Larry did there, because most humans would not do that. Most humans would just believe what they thought. You know, we just believe our thoughts. So it's a wonderful first step to just practice not believing what the mind is saying, to practice just not being interested. You know, that's a wonderful, wonderful first step. I can't think of a better use of time than learning not to believe the mind. But then at some point, if the guidance comes to, okay, now let's go so deep into awareness that there seems to be very little of that mind chatter at all, because the attention just isn't there. The attention's on the wind on the face or the attention's on the work that's being done. The attention's on the sensation of cold around the toes. The attention's on, you know, watching the dog breathe as she sleeps. Then that's a wonderful step too. And again, I can't think of anything better to do with time. Both steps to me are absolutely perfect. So again, the yoga vasistha quote is, bring about the cessation of mind. And people might ask, how do you bring about the cessation of mind? Well, I think step one, by practicing not believing your thoughts. And step two, by going deeper into awareness. And again, the journal entry was, the mind will chatter, simply learn not to believe it. You can just let it alone. And so that takes us to 690. And Paul, by the way, asked, are you trying to say people are liars? Well, I mean, I guess that depends on how you define lie. I would say the thoughts are lies. You know, almost all of our thoughts are lies. Almost all of our thoughts, you know. I don't know what it would be on a scale, but at least 99%, and I bet you it's way over that. I bet it's 99.5, 99.7, 99.8, you know. And so if we believe our thoughts, then you could say innocently, yes, we're liars. But you got to throw that word innocently in there. We're believing lies, and then we're speaking and acting from lies, right? But innocently, in most cases, you know, we're just believing thoughts that aren't true is really what we're doing. As Jesus said on the cross, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. But Jesus called the ego the father of lies. Let's see, as a biological species and can be classified as a lion animal, in my humble opinion. Yeah. All right, so let's go on to number 690. Mind and movement of thought are inseparable, and the cessation of one is the cessation of both. Mind and movement of thought. Movement of thought and mind are inseparable. The cessation of one is the cessation of both. And of course, if you pay attention to thought, you can see the movement, you know, the movement happening from this thought to this thought to this thought. Sometimes you might not be able to count them because it can happen so quickly, but you can see the movement. There's just a movement going on there. And what the Yoga Vasistha is saying here is that that movement of thought is mind. When we say mind, it's referring to that movement of thought. And so if you can cease the movement of thought, you are also ceasing what is called mind. And again, I think the practices we just talked about are the practices that cease the movement of thought. Step one. Practice not believing the thoughts. And step two. When the time is right, when you feel the guidance, practice going so deeply into awareness that somehow the thoughts just seem to be left in the background. Mind and movement of thought are inseparable, and the cessation of one is the cessation of both. All right, let's see what I wrote in the journal. The incessant chatter of mind comes about by giving it believing attention. See all that noise as meaningless. Give it no believing attention, and the noise will cease soon enough. You know, I think it is helpful, at least it was helpful to me, at some point I began to see, you know, and I don't think I could make this happen, so I guess I'll have to call it grace. But at some point I began to see that I was making stuff up and believing it, or, you know, or a thought would come into the mind and I would believe it. And I've probably told this story before, because this is around the time when I was really starting to notice how much I believed stupid stuff. But I remember distinctly that I was driving Jasmine to school, and there was this bus stop we drove by every day, and you kind of got to know the kids that were standing there. Even though you didn't know them, you'd see the same kids standing there every day. And one day we drove by the bus stop, and there was a pickup parked there that was not usually parked there. And I think I said something to Jasmine like, oh, you know what? And I don't remember what the weather was like that day. Maybe it was cold. Maybe it was looking like it might rain in a moment or whatever. But, you know, I said something like, oh, you know what? They're sitting there with their kid in their car because they don't want them to have to stand out there and be so cold, or something like that. And then I realized I made that up. I made that up. I don't know why that car is sitting there. You know, I mean, I doubt it was anything suspicious, but maybe they were talking on the phone. Maybe they were actually waiting for someone to come out of a nearby house. You know, it was a logical explanation that they were sitting there because they didn't want the kid to have to stand outside in the cold. I mean, it was reasonable. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't, you know, anything that would start a rumor or anything like that. But it was made up. I didn't know anything about that truck and why that truck was sitting there. And what began to happen was I began to notice this all the time. I began to notice, in fact, what I would start to do, and this phase probably lasted a year or a year and a half or 2 years. I don't know how long it lasted. It lasted a while, and it might even still happen sometimes, but it was very regular for a while, is that I would do stuff like that. Again, innocent stuff, but just seeing something or hearing something and then making something up about it. And I would find myself usually telling Jasmine or Danielle, because that's who I lived with at the time, I would find myself telling Jasmine or Danielle something, and as I would hear myself say it, I would go, wait a minute, I don't know that. I take that back. And that's what I would do. I take that back. I just made that up. And I would just say that right out loud. I take that back. I just made that up. I don't know that. And I started really practicing that. And then what started happening, Jasmine and Danielle back then used to always ask me questions. I was kind of the leader of the household. And so they were always asking me questions about, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I started noticing also that when they would ask me questions, that I would make up answers. I mean, not intending to lie, you understand. This is just what all humans do. You know, you don't really know the answer. You have maybe a bit of information here and a bit of information there, but you kind of fill it in. You make it up. And you guys may be really aware of this from when we were kids. We used to play that telephone game. Remember when somebody would whisper something in your ear, and then you'd turn around and whisper it into somebody else's, and you'd turn it around and whisper it, and by the time it got to the end, it wasn't at all what was being said? The reason for that is because we wouldn't quite hear a word, and we weren't allowed to ask them to repeat it. That was one of the rules of the game. So our mind would make up what that word must have been, and then we would turn around and say it as if that's what the word was. And as it went around the circle, it would change. So I just started noticing how often my mind was making stuff up. And so then when they would ask me a question, I would start saying, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. And in fact, I still say that so much of the time, probably, oh my gosh, I don't know how much, a lot of the time when people ask me questions, my answer is, I don't know the answer to that. Because I've gotten to the point where I'm not quite as active at making stuff up as I used to. I'm not going to say I'm perfect about it, because I'm sure I'm not. But again, it is really helpful to begin losing interest in the mind if you can also start noticing how much is just made up stuff. I mean, a lot of it is just made up stuff. And that's really, really helpful. Paul is asking, Regina, I've heard that box, I think meaning the chatterbox of the mind, really never ceases, and that's the trick, is to turn attention away from the fostering. What do you say? I can only speak honestly about my experience now. And now, of course, it has not ceased. But there are masters who say that it goes silent. And I think it's a mistake to make a belief about that, I guess I would say. I think it's a mistake to adopt the belief it will never cease. And I think it's a mistake to adopt the belief that it will. I think this is a wonderful time for us to say, I don't know the answer to that question. But you know what, Paul? You've just given me a great opportunity to show how we make stuff up, right? I mean, lots of people probably have an opinion that the mind will never cease or that the mind will cease. And do any of us know? Mm-mm, we made that up. We heard it somewhere and believed it. So much of our thinking follows that pattern. And this is how, of course, gossip gets started. I remember way back when I was in the Air Force, they thought at that time that I might have cancer. I didn't, but they thought that I might have cancer. So I had surgery, I had a biopsy, and then after the surgery, I think there was like 6 weeks when I was not able to go back to work. I had to rest from the surgery. And so they sent me home. They let me go home and be with my mom and rest from the surgery. Well, when I came back, I found out that everybody believed that I had had an affair with our first sergeant, who was, you know, kind of like our boss, for those of you who don't know the military terms. I had an affair with our first sergeant and that I was pregnant and that I had gone away to have an abortion. You know, and, you know, that's what happens. And who knows how that started? You know, maybe somebody was malicious, but maybe somebody just had a thought and believed it. Right? And then they told somebody, and then they had another thought that added to it, and they believed their thought. And pretty soon you have this story that is just, there's no basis of truth in it whatsoever. So, you know, it's great to notice this stuff, of course, in a non-judgmental way. But when we notice how much of the mind really is just, you know, meaningless. I mean, absolutely meaningless. I mean, it is helpful to use the mind to program a web page, right? That's where the mind is a very helpful tool. To learn HTML and use HTML to create a web page is useful. But so much of that stuff is just craziness, meaningless, not worth the time of day. And the more and more that we see that, and the more and more, of course, that we don't want to be a part of that, the more and more we can just start, you know, start ignoring the mind. Not out of fear, but just out of, you know, I'm not listening to you anymore. In fact, in Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul, one of the things he talks about in that book is if your mind was like another person sitting on the sofa next to you, saying all of the things to you that your mind says all the time, you wouldn't put up with that person for more than 30 minutes. I mean, you'd be like, wow, wow, I am so done with you. But the reason that we listen is because we think it's me, it's my mind, it's us, you know, and so we listen. But maybe we need to start looking at it a little differently so that we can lose interest in it and not give it that believing attention, because you know what? It really isn't worth it. It doesn't deserve that believing attention. It really doesn't. So again, the incessant chatter of mind comes about by giving it believing attention. See all that noise as meaningless. Give it no believing attention, and the noise will cease soon enough. Give it no believing attention, and the noise will cease soon enough. So I'm going to scroll down and click on number 691. Oh, and Lori's asking me to repeat what I said from the Michael Singer book. Yeah, The Complaining Roommate. Yeah, Michael Singer said something like, if you could take your mind and put it inside a body sitting next to you on the sofa, and that body, like someone else, was saying everything that your mind says all the time, you'd lose interest in that person very quickly. You would not listen to someone else saying to you everything that your mind says. But the reason you listen to your mind is because you think it's you. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I am now looking at number 691. Again, a very, very short quote from the Yoga Vasistha. Mind should be destroyed. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, that language, mind should be destroyed. If you were here this morning when I was teaching, you might say, well, you know what, that's completely different than what you said this morning, Regina, because this morning you were talking about how when we try to get rid of our thoughts or our emotions or anything else, that it's really like an attack energy. And that attack energy is what writes the appearance, the world of attack. And what you said this morning was, instead of trying to get rid of things, learn to just relax with them. You know, just relax. And as you relax, you're actually letting go. And now here we read, mind should be destroyed. Well, I'm not going to defend any of the people from the Hindu culture that use the word destroyed. I know it's very common. You know, I've seen Ramana Maharshi use similar language. You know, this is very common. What I will simply do is tell you what my mind or my right mind says when it says or whispers to me when I see the word destroyed. When I see the word destroyed, that just means don't give it attention. Don't build it up. If you don't build it up, it falls apart. You know, like a farmhouse or a barn. How many of you have, you know, been driving? I'm sure everyone have been driving down the road and you see an old farmhouse or an old barn where no one has lived in a very long time. Nobody's taking care of it. Nobody's building it up. And it's starting to lean. It's starting to crumble. In effect, it is starting to be destroyed by lack of attention, right? The destruction of it is natural. In order to keep that farmhouse going, in order to keep that barn standing, you need to be every year giving it attention, replacing this, painting that, repairing that. And if you aren't constantly giving it attention, its destruction is natural through lack of attention. So that's when I see mind should be destroyed, that's what I see. Not that I need to attack it in any way. Not that I need to fight it and get rid of thoughts and anything like that. But I need to cease to give it attention. I need to stop building it up. And then its destruction is natural from lack of attention. I'm going to look and see what I wrote in the journal. This one, even though it's a very, very short quote, mind should be destroyed, it's a, you know, fairly lengthy journal entry. So let me write what let me read what I wrote that day. Mind should be ignored when it chatters with stories and interpretations that are not true. But do not be mistaken on this point. You do not ignore mind when you fight or struggle against it. Ignoring mind is a gentle heart action. It is like one who takes in the scent of a rose bush with such love and gratitude that he doesn't notice the trash truck passing on a nearby road. Ignore mind by staying in the heart. Ignore mind by noticing awareness. Ignore mind by enjoying being. Ignore mind by marveling at the miracle of life. Ignore mind by being grateful for your own self, true self. So really, this is just the same teaching that I spoke about a few moments ago when I said, you know, my first step for me was to practice or to learn not to believe the mind. But that now the step is more about placing attention with the present moment or with the work that is to be done. And because attention is with something else, the attention simply isn't with the mind. And so the mind is not getting that attention. And so like the old barn, it will begin to crumble, right? And I love this line. Listen to this line. Now remember, when you're paying attention to the moment, remember that if you're washing dishes, you're noticing the smell of the dish soap. Maybe if the sun's coming through the window on your face, you're noticing the warmth of the sun on your face. You're noticing the warmth of the warm dishwater on your hands. When you're rinsing a dish, you're watching the little bubbles kind of be washed off of the dish by the water and go down the drain. And you notice the drips, you know, when you take it out of the water, the plate or whatever, you're noticing the drips kind of drip off. And then you sit it in the dish drainer and, you know, you're just really paying attention to that. Now listen to this. Ignoring mind is a gentle heart action. It is like one who takes in the scent of a rose bush with such love and gratitude that he doesn't notice the trash truck passing on a nearby road. And of course, taking in the scent of the rose bush with love and gratitude is paying attention to the moment, paying attention to the experience. You know, if it is cold outside and you don't have a neck scarf and the wind is blowing, notice the shiver. Don't judge the shiver. That's paying attention to the mind. Just notice the shiver. Notice what it feels like to shiver. Notice which muscles in your body kind of tighten with a shiver, right? Pay attention. And when you're paying attention to a shiver and you're paying attention to the muscles that are tightening with the shiver and just noticing that with this incredible curiosity and love for life, I mean, your attention's not on the trash truck that's passing by, is it? The trash truck goes unnoticed. It doesn't get your attention. And then eventually, of course, because of lack of attention, like the old barn, the trash truck dies. It breaks down. Yeah, what a beautiful way to practice. And you know what else happens when you practice that way is you're not missing life. When we're lost in the mind, we miss life. We all know that. And in fact, I definitely still get lost in the mind. I don't want to pretend like I don't. That's why I need to practice being in the moment. But I practice being in the moment so much now, it's becoming much more common for me to be in the moment, that when I go back in the mind, the first thing I notice when I catch myself is, wow, I just missed dot, 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 whatever I was doing. You know, I just missed walking from my bedroom to my office. I didn't see that happen. You know, I just missed turning on the car and pulling out of the driveway. I didn't see that happen. And so I pay attention to also, as kind of a training tool, like training myself, again, non-judgmentally, I pay attention to noticing what I just missed. I pay attention to noticing that when I get lost in the mind, I miss the experience of life. And I want to live this experience of life. I want to live it very deeply. I don't really want to miss a thing. And so because I want to live this experience of life, then every time I catch myself in mind and I notice what I just missed, that kind of helps me increase my desire, increase my willingness to not be lost in mind. It helps me to stay into the moment even more. Again, all done non-judgmentally, of course. So again, the quote that we're looking at says mind should be destroyed. But listen to this, what I think is a lovely journal entry. Mind should be ignored when it chatters with stories and interpretations that are not true, but do not be mistaken on this point. You do not ignore mind when you fight or struggle against it. Ignoring mind is a gentle heart action. It is like one who takes in the scent of a rose bush with such love and gratitude that he doesn't notice the trash truck passing on a nearby road. Ignore mind by staying in the heart. Ignore mind by noticing awareness. Ignore mind by enjoying being. Ignore mind by marveling at the miracle of life. Ignore mind by being grateful for your own true self. And now I'm going to 692. 692 is also a very short quote. We're covering a lot more quotes than usual tonight, but that's because they're so short. But to the point, 692 says, "You do not exist, O mind." Let me say that again. Ah, yes, I knew when I said that I had heard that before, and I thought, where did I hear that? You do not exist, O mind. And that's very, very similar to the language that's used in the movie The Little Buddha, when Buddha is looking at the ego and letting go of the ego, I'll say for the final time, in order to awaken into enlightenment. He looks right at it and says something very similar. You do not exist, O mind. I think what he does, if I remember correctly, and some of you may know the Buddha story better than me. My knowledge of the Buddha story is based on the little Buddha and a little bit of reading, but primarily the little Buddha. But I think he touches the earth and he says something like, with the earth as my witness, you do not exist, O mind, or whatever he says. You do not exist with the earth as my witness. You do not exist, O mind. That's the ultimate in not believing, don't you think? Isn't that the ultimate in not believing? You do not exist, O mind. All right, let me look at what I wrote in the journal. It is okay to whisper to the mind, sharing the wisdom of the heart. The wisdom of the heart is strengthened by sharing it, even if you are only sharing it with the illusory idea of a mind. So how might we do that? You know, maybe we don't actually have the true resolve that Buddha had when he said, with the earth as my witness, you do not exist, O mind. And maybe for us, that wouldn't be a complete truth yet. We're still engrossed in the mind somewhat. We still believe some of its stories, if not all of its stories. And so to say that, it wouldn't be the same heart action. It would just be imitation. But how can we use that example in a way that is a true heart action, that isn't just imitation, something that is truly helpful? Well, maybe something like this. Maybe I'm listening to a story, la, 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 you know, somebody... I think my mind is telling me that somebody had an affair with a first sergeant and the reason she's not here is she went to have an abortion. Right, my mind is telling me this story. And then I can say, ah, mind, you do not know what you speak about. I can say that, and that can be very genuine because I can be very aware that I have no evidence that anything that the mind is saying right now is true. Just like going by the bus stop that day and I heard myself say, oh, you know, they're just sitting there by the bus stop because they don't want their child to get out in the cold. Wait a minute. Mind, you don't know that. I mean, that's something we can do, can't we? Can't we start speaking to the mind, following the example of Buddha and the Yoga Vasistha, with something that is very genuine and true for us and is moving us in the direction where one day we will be able to say with complete sincerity, you do not exist, O mind? But for now we can say, you don't know what you're talking about, mind. And when we say, you don't know what you're talking about, mind, aren't we also withdrawing our interest? Right? With the earth as my witness, you don't know what you're talking about, mind. With the earth as my witness, you just made that up. I mean, it may sound silly. Actually, it sounds fun. But I bet it would work so well. I bet so much attention would be subtracted from the mind's chatter if we would start speaking to mind in that way. You don't know that. You just made that up. You're only assuming. You know, just start talking to the mind with wisdom. Right? Because wasn't Buddha talking to the mind with wisdom when he said, with the earth of my witness, with the earth as my witness, you do not exist, O mind? Right? He was using wisdom to speak to the non-existent mind. We can do the same thing. I think that's a beautiful idea. You do not exist. You don't know what you're talking about. You just made that up. Of course, it all has to be done non-judgmentally. But what a helpful tool. So again, the journal entry says, it is okay to whisper to the mind, sharing the wisdom of the heart. The wisdom of the heart is strengthened by sharing it, even if you are only sharing it with the illusory idea of a mind. Listen to that. The wisdom of the heart is strengthened by sharing it. So every time I tell the mind, you don't know what you're talking about, I am actually strengthening that wisdom that knows listening to the mind is, well, let's just say the mind is meaningless. So it's wasting my time. The wisdom that knows that the mind is meaningless is strengthened by me talking to the mind and saying, you just made that up. You don't know what you're talking about. You're only assuming. You're filling in an awful lot of blanks there in that thought. Right? It is okay to whisper to the mind, sharing the wisdom of the heart. The wisdom of the heart is strengthened by sharing it, even if you are only sharing it with the illusory idea of a mind. And with that, I am going to let go of the mic and leave the room for a few minutes to go get Liz. And I will be back so that in about 5 minutes we can start our December satsang with Liz Cronkite. I will see you all very soon.